Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we meet Tulsa children's book author Stacy Nykos. Nykos is a former political scientist who a little over 10 years ago was writing articles on the EU law and politics in the European Court of Justice while working at the University of Tulsa and OU Tulsa. She's traded that for writing books about sea creatures and a dog with a destructive tail. Nykos, who holds a PhD in comparative government from the University of Virginia, went back to school to get an MFA in writing for children at Vermont College, and she's been highly successful since. Waggers, the book about that dog with a destructive tail, is her latest book and her seventh book for young readers, six of which are picture books, and the seventh is a young adult novel titled Dragon Wishes. She'll be signing her new book this Saturday from 1 to 3 at the South Roads Barnes & Noble, and she joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Stacy Nykos, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And congratulations on your latest picture book, Waggers. How did you get started doing picture books?
There's a question without an easy answer. I started writing poetry when I was in college. That was my first foray into writing. But I knew I couldn't get my parents to let me be a poet, because that's like asking if you can live in their basement for the rest of your life. So I became a professor, even better. And as soon as I finished my PhD, one of the first things I started doing was writing poetry again. And at that point, I'd had my first daughter, and I started writing poetry for kids, and that segued into books for kids.
Now, at what point did the poetry for kids end up saying, wow, this could be a picture book or a children's book? Was it just a process?
Part of that was my daughter Bella and I were going to zoos and aquariums, which is what you do when your kids are little. And I always, when we would go to the gift shop, I always wanted to take something home that might last longer than 5 seconds. Which is
like a picture book.
Like a picture book. And there weren't a lot of them. And I thought, wow, this is a hole in the market. And I have to say, as an aside, I grew up the daughter of a CPA, and my father works with small businesses. So I sort of ingested from early on, where's the hole in the market? How can you be an entrepreneur? And so that was in the back of my head. And so I started playing with the poetry and picture book idea, and that segued into books.
And I think about the first four or five, what is this, your seventh, I think?
Yeah. Seventh.
Yeah, and most of the picture books have always had a nautical theme. There's been, a squid, a lemon shark, and various
dolphin,
yeah, and characters. This is one about a dog.
I've departed.
Yeah. And in fact, as you were telling me before the interview, it's like the very last page, there's a nautical theme that your illustrator put in.
Yeah, I don't know if she did that as homage to the fact that I have so many water-themed picture books, or if she actually, she's from Spain, Tamara Anagon, and I don't know if she actually lives on the ocean, so I don't know if those coincided together, but I was tickled pink to see that there were dolphins on the last page of the book.
So this book, it's a common story. You adopt a dog, and the dog wreaks havoc in the house, and I assume this happened in your real life, and this became the basis for the story?
Wouldn't it be horrible if I said no? Yeah. I did. Yeah, it did happen. We have had three dogs, my husband and I, since becoming adults. Mm-hmm. And our third dog, Desi, we adopted from the Tulsa Pound. So we'd had experiences with pound puppies before, but each one's different. And Desi was, they found her on the streets of Tulsa. She was only 4 months old when we got her. We brought her home. And she was just so excited to be adopted that her tail, I don't think, has stopped wagging since we brought her home. And it has such a destructive tail. I mean, she's not a huge dog. She's part German Shepherd and part Rhodesian Ridgeback. And so she's about 40 pounds. But that tail, every day when I get up to take a shower, my husband's having breakfast, and the rooms touch each other. They share a wall. And every time I think she is going to pound that wall just because her tail, she hits it. She's so excited that he's petting her. So, yes, there was – it only took me like 3 months or maybe so until I thought, oh, this might be a good idea for a book.
Yeah. Now, I'm always interested in folks who write picture books because it's kind of a specialized genre. It's about, 500, 600-word story. And it has to be easily illustratable. And yet you're not the illustrator. So, you have to create a clear narrative, that leads itself to being illustrated. So it has to have quite a bit of action, but not too much action. And there's all sorts of little peculiar words about writing a picture book. What have you found the little rules of writing a picture book?
I have to say the rules have changed quite a bit. When I first started, the word count was 900, and now it's down to 500. So you have to imagine cutting your manuscript in half. And that, 900 words already isn't a lot. Yeah. 500 is my Christmas letter, and that's one page. And I still have room to write my name at the end. So it's not a lot of words. And so I've learned to look at my words and have them do not just double duty, but triple duty. Not only am I introducing character, but I'm also forwarding plot And if I'm a little bit lucky, you know, I've also got setting in there somehow too. And so it really is a process of learning how to take words and have them really perform a lot of tasks. Sort of like be a mom. Every word's a mom. You have to multitask. Mm-hmm. And that takes a bit of practice. And I would say more now than earlier, I will sometimes put in Illustrator notes because I don't want to add setting. I think the Illustrator can do that, but it's integral to the story itself. And that's the thing you have that I've learned as a picture book writer is that it's good to leave part of the story to the illustration so that the illustration sort of complements the story and even carries it at certain points.
You know, the best picture books also leave a little bit to the imagination for the child, too, that's reading, or the many cases in picture books, it's a parent reading the book to the child. I mean, I think that's also part of it as well, isn't it?
Yes, especially at the end of a book. I do a lot of writing workshops with kids, and I tell them there are five parts to story, and the last part is that you have to end with a twist. And by that, I tell them what you want to do is leave enough unsaid that your reader can imagine the story continuing on. And kids really get that because they're so great about they'll read a book that they love and then they just start thinking of the next story and they write their own stories. Mm-hmm. And so they really get that point. And I would say as an adult, it gets harder to remember that. You have to go back to your kid brain. You're like, oh yeah, you want to be able to tell the story yourself. And so I kind of have to relax a little bit into that.
Well, in this case, it's sort of the problem is the dog wags his tail and destroys the house. And then eventually they find a use and at the end, it's no longer a problem. But the way you do end it, it's like, well, what would happen next?
Right, because they've solved the problem for at home. But as soon as you take Waggers out of his home environment, you know, what happens next?
Right.
And so I've imagined trips to Grandma and Grandpa's. The illustrator put him on a sailboat, which is just great. Because what do you do if you have a crazy tail and you're on a sailboat?
So how the manuscript, when you first say, okay, I'm going to do a picture book about a dog that has a long tail that destroys a house. So how long is that first draft? I mean, you're getting down to 500, 600 words. Does it start at 1,200? Does it start at 1,500 words and you sort of pare it down? Or have you learned how to pretty much write succinctly where each sentence is doing double, triple duty, as you mentioned earlier?
You know, I got my start in journalism. I was...
So that's about... It's all very simple and direct.
In journalism, if they tell you an article needs to be 700 words, you know that if you don't come in at 700 words, the ending's going to get lopped off. Or something's going to get lopped off that you don't want lopped off. And so I really try to write to word length. Mm-hmm. And with picture books, of course, you know, you do have a bit of leeway, 500 to 750. I mean, that's you get 50% more potentially. Mm-hmm. And so I'll try to but I don't like to go over that. If anything, I like to go back and check and see if I can hone it down a little bit more. And can I have my words doing double duty? Stephen King says that, you know, it's first draft minus 10% equals second draft. Mm-hmm. And I don't tend to write long. So at first I thought, that's a great idea. And then I thought, all my books are now haikus.
Now, you're writing young adult novels too, and I guess you're working on several as well. How does this style of writing translate to a young adult? Is it just you just throw out all the rules of picture books when you're writing? Does it inflect one or the other?
I have found that writing different styles of writing makes my writing across the board better. And in fact, I got the idea from a playwright. He said, anybody who's a novelist should write a play because it will help you. And I wasn't really crazy about the idea of writing a play. I'm not Ibsen. But I thought, oh, but I could write a movie script. So I've done that. Actually, I'm working on a movie right now. And I found that what one doesn't anticipate as a writer is that as soon as you change the rules to the game. So for a picture book, it's very concise. It's almost like poetry. And so it's how can I make my words serve triple or double duty. And when I go to a novel, then it becomes, how can I take that succinctness but build upon it and add setting and add character? What do I need? And so the picture book always helps me to keep in mind, don't add too much. Don't bore your reader. Mm-hmm. And while the novel gives me an attempt to flourish a little bit, to use setting, for instance, as another character, to almost use it as a sound system underneath the character itself so they can resonate. And so it's a way to add depth to a story that I don't necessarily have in a picture book.
Now, even in your novel writing and young adult writing, do you tend to still write direct, though, much like a picture book? Not in the way of a picture book, but, you know, succinctly as far as sentence structure? Or do you write more elliptically or, you know, the style of your writing changes quite a bit?
Yeah, the style of my writing definitely changes. The sentences get longer. They're more descriptive. I have paragraphs instead of sentences.
Sorry about that. That's a bit dumb. That's a bit of a dumb question.
It is really different than that sense. There's dialogue. In picture books, dialogue can be very short. There might be a little bit less. I would have to say there's a lot of dialogue, though, in Waggers. I like dialogue. Dialogue has a tendency to, and that probably comes from my script writing, it tends to pick up the pace of a book. And so I find with my novels, even, it's harder and harder for me to write long descriptive paragraphs because I feel as though I'm slowing the pacing down. I almost feel like it's like Hemingway. You know, he always tried to write very succinctly and very short. And I sort of feel like that's what script writing has and picture book writing has done to my novel writing.
Now your young adult novel that you put out it was set in China.
Yeah.
How did this story come about?
Oh, that's – so when my kids are now 15 and 12. And when they were 4 and 2, they were in a near-fatal sledding accident.
Goodness.
And oh, yeah, I know. There's no easy way to tell this story. People are like, oh, that's a real conversation killer. And at the time, I was working on Squirt. Or Squirt had just come out, and I think I was working on Shelby. And I just stopped writing. I couldn't write because I felt like I was there. I should have been able to do something, and I wasn't. And my kids are fine today. But it was a really terrifying moment as a parent. And it just killed me as an artist. I couldn't work. And I ended up going to a conference for children's writers, and one of the speakers said, you need to write from true emotions because that's what grabs your reader and pulls them in. And I thought, well, I have a really big emotion that I can't seem to get around. And I thought, it's a little bit heavy for a picture book or for a novel, even for children. And then I thought, well, what if I do what we do as readers. So many times I ask kids, when you have had a really bad day, do you ever go home and pick up a book, pick up a comic book, you know, and just sort of escape? Mm-hmm. And they said, yeah. And I thought, well, what if I put that aspect into the novel itself, that I'll have this world set in ancient China, and that's the escape for the main character until it becomes a way for her to figure out how to move on in her life. And so it really lightens the mood of the story, and it keeps it from becoming too heavy.
You know, it's funny you were saying this is a heavy concept for a young adult novel. When you look at what the classics are today, I mean, it's like, you know, nuclear annihilation. It's a post-apocalyptic Hunger Games thing.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, those stories are – there's probably nothing too heavy for a young adult novel. Maybe a grisly murder, you know, or a serial killer.
But. Although I have to say this one was actually sold as a middle grade. So that's like 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
And then that topic can get a little too heavy for a 12-year-old. And the story is the main character's 11.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, Harry Potter, both of his parents die. He's an orphan.
Right. So, everybody around him dies.
Yeah, everybody around him dies. I mean, look at Lord of the Rings. That was written for kids, too. So, but to me, it was, I think that's the thing. As the writer, we experience the emotions of our stories so much more intensely than anybody ever could because they're ours. And so the question is how to take that intense emotion and make it such that it's an entertaining story that is also literature. And doesn't cross any of those, doesn't go to the T-O-O word, too much, too little, too hard.
My guest today is Stacy Nykos, a children's book author. Her latest book is a picture book titled Waggers. It's her 7th book overall, and she's got more books that are coming down the way. And she's a Tulsan, and she's our guest today here on Studio Tulsa. Now, with Waggers, this is, your 4th illustrator you've worked with? 3rd or 4th?
I think it's the 4th.
Yeah. Yes. 4th illustrator. This is one of the interesting things about picture books is that, you know, as when I first became aware of picture books, you would assume that the writer and the illustrator might be the same or if they're not, that they're working hand in hand to create this book that's, you know, it's wonderful. But of course, as you well know, most of the time it's you hand in a manuscript, the publisher selects an illustrator. You might have conversations with the illustrator. You may... You know, maybe not. In some cases, what's that like when you first pick up the book, when you see your story illustrated, and it can be, I'm sure at times it can be perfect for exactly what you imagine, and other times, completely different.
Oh, that's a really good question. I have had all of the different experiences. I've had the experience where I've turned in a manuscript, and I didn't even see roughs. All I saw was the finished book in my hands when I got my advance copies. And that was the most extreme process I've ever been through. The other ones have been less than that. I've had more interaction with the illustrator in varying degrees. And I would have to say, but that experience where I got the finished book was It takes a moment because, of course, in my head, I have these
So you
images.
Do have a definite illustrative idea as you're writing the manuscript that it's going to look sort of like this, or it's going to look somewhat like this.
I think as a writer, we have to have at least some idea about illustration because we need to know page turns. And I only have 32 pages to work with. One page is the title page. One page is the copyright page. So I really only have 30 pages as the writer. And so I need to know where's the climax of the story going to come? Have I put in some moments there where it's a good page turn that will help the reader keep reading? So I do have to think at least illustratively to a certain point. Now, does that mean that, you know, as the writer, it's not my job to tell the illustrator, okay, so I'm imagining a seahorse who's sort of orange with brown spots. You know, that's up to them. Or if they want to add in another character that's a silent character, which I've seen illustrators do, which I love. One of the illustrators I worked with did that. And so those things, as the writer, you have to think of this. This is a collaborative process. And it's fun, really, to step back and see what somebody's going to do with my work. I had the same thing when I was writing poetry in college, and people would come up to me and they say, so did you mean this with your poem? And I thought, no, but that is a cool interpretation.
I like it, yes.
I'm going to stick with that one. Yes, that's what I meant.
Well, in many ways, it's like the screenplays, theatrical plays, and picture books are the one time when the writers are in collaboration with somebody else.
Yes, we have to deal with real people.
Yeah. So what is that experience when you haven't seen the illustrations as they're taking shape or haven't had conversations with illustrators beforehand, you get the finished book in your hand and it's like, oh, this is what it's going to look like.
It's like having a baby. It's like having a baby and not seeing the ultrasounds. The baby comes out and you're like,
oh, it's a girl.
Well, look at that. And it takes a moment. I mean, you know, when your baby is born, you love your child instantly, but you fall in love with them over time. And I think that it's the same thing with a picture book. You have it and you see it and you think that's really cool, but it takes a little bit of falling in love with, okay, so this is how they interpreted this. I have to go back in and look at the interpretation and then understand it and have an experience with it. So it is a process of falling in love with
now,
what I get.
Now, have you had opportunities where you actually work closely with the illustrator?
Yeah, I've had the opportunity where the illustrator and I work hand in hand, and I'm actually doing that right now with an illustrator I had worked with previously. And I love that because she'll tell me, okay, the words aren't working for me on this page. Or, you know, we've got too much here. Can you cut it down? And as long as the writer is willing to take that type of criticism and say, absolutely, if it's not working for you, let's figure out how to make it work, it becomes a really interesting collaboration.
That's kind of an odd odd comment to say a 500-word manuscript. There's too much here.
There's too much here. Yeah, this is not working for me. Okay, let's see. What's not working? How can I make this work? That particular book is actually longer. It's a nonfiction picture book, and it's about Charlie Christian, who is the...
Oh, yeah, great jazz guitarist. Yeah, right. Came from Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he actually revolutionized the electric guitar. Mm-hmm. And we're working on that book together. And it's been, and her father-in-law is a jazz musician, and he played his way through the Vietnam War. And so we've had a really great opportunity to pool on someone who has had these great jazz experiences. And so she'll come to me and say, okay, we need to do this, or this isn't working here. And so I, as an artist, grow. It teaches me more about page turns and what I need to think about is going on the page.
Now, you're working on, I'm not sure if it's an adult novel or a young adult novel right now about a grandfather's journey.
Yes.
Tell us about this. This sounds like it's one of those great river stories, you know, where people take a river trip.
Yes. So in 1939, when my grandfather turned 18, graduated from high school, he and a buddy of his rebuilt a canoe. This was up in Huntington, Indiana, which is where I grew up in Indiana. And they canoed from Huntington, Indiana, all the way down to New Orleans. And that was over 1,600 miles of paddling.
So it's the Ohio River down to the Mississippi.
It's the Wabash to the Ohio to the Mississippi.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
They had to take two rivers to get to the Mississippi. Uh-huh. And they got washed out and lost everything, including the canoe, and had to go back. And that was only a week into the journey. nobody thought he was going to do it because he was kind of a dreamer and nobody thought he would follow through. And he did. I mean, that's a huge commitment. If you think about, that's just so many miles in a canoe at the age of 18. And this is, in my family, there's no money to be had. You know, you don't inherit money in my family. You inherit cookie recipes I got this story. This was given to me. And with it comes a great deal of responsibility, of course, too, because I want to do justice to the story. And so I've actually done a draft as a movie script, and I got through it, and I thought, that's not working. I need to go back and work on it again. And so I started actually researching. You know, I knew my grandfather's my grandfather, and I wanted to know him as a young man. And he died about 15 years ago. So I started researching the time he spent in World War II because he was in the Battle of the Bulge, and he got separated from his troops, and he was a sergeant. And, I mean, those are really moments that define you as an individual. And so I've hooked up with the 17th Airborne, which is the group that he was with, and mm-hmm. I've met men from that division, and I've spoken with them, and just really trying to recreate my grandfather for myself as someone independent of being my grandfather. And I'm working on another book right now, and I plan to have that done by the end of the year. And once I'm done with that, that's the next project that I'm going to go back in again and rewrite it and do it one more time.
So it won't be a movie script at this point. It's going to be more like a regular novel or?
It's going to be both. Uh-huh. A friend of mine that I went to high school with is a script editor, uh-huh. and he's worked on a million things. And we've collaborated on two movie scripts, and we've done a documentary together. And this one, we're collaborating on the movie script. And I, as a writer, I'm always trying to grow. And usually what happens is you write the novel first, and then you write the movie script. And this time I said, hey, why don't we write the movie script first, and then I'll write the novel, because I just want to see what I learn from doing that. And so that's the process.
Well,
for this
and one. That's also a valid, you know, it's a novelization of a movie. You know, that happens all the time in the business.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we wish you great success with that. And I guess being here in Tulsa, you do a lot of school events. Is that right?
Yes, I do. I go and visit schools and do writing workshops and talk mm-hmm. to kids about writing. Mm-hmm.
I would imagine with all those nautical themes in your books, you do a lot with the Oklahoma Aquarium. I think they chose your book as a special book at one point, right?
They did. When Squirt came out, it was the Oklahoma Aquarium's book of the year.
Yeah.
And so I'm out there, when the holidays roll around, a couple times in the summer, I'll go out and sign. Mm-hmm. And this year, actually, I have two books that came out. There's another one called Toby. It came out this summer. And it's the story of a sea turtle's adventures from egg to ocean. And that one has actually been chosen as the Read Across Oklahoma book for 2015.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So I'll be going down to Oklahoma City in April to read to 5,000 5-year-olds.
At the state capitol?
Yeah. Assume. I'm thinking about setting my hair on fire to keep their attention.
Well, yeah, it's going to have to be a vivid read.
I don't know. Maybe I can glow. Maybe I can get one of those suits from the Hunger Games where she's on fire. I don't know.
Well, that's great. Congratulations on that. That's
Thank
great.
You.
And congratulations on Waggers. Have a great Thanksgiving. Stacy, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tulsa children's book author Stacy Nyko speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Her seventh book for young readers, Waggers, a picture book, is just been published. She'll be signing the new book this Saturday from 1 to 3 at the South Roads Barnes & Noble. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Connie Cronley.
For some months, a vexing problem, especially downtown, has been a population of homeless young people on the street. They came in slowly, like swallows drifting into Capistrano. Now there are a couple hundred of them, gathering in parks, sleeping on church grounds, sometimes panhandling, sometimes leaving trash in alleys. Who are these people? Where'd they come from? What's to be done about them? These are questions I hear regularly because I work at a soup kitchen located in a downtown church, and street kids are some of the people we feed every day. They're a fairly new cohort, age 24 and younger, mostly white, and they're called street kids. Someone asked if they came to Tulsa because we are a compassionate community with generous social services. And I think that's like saying the reason we have diseases today we didn't even know of 100 years ago is because we have better medical care than we had 100 years ago. Homeless street kids are not unique to Tulsa. They are a national phenomenon. Cities across the nation, from New York to San Francisco, are seeing an explosion of street kids in urban areas. In Billings, Montana, they comprise 28% of the homeless population. Cities everywhere are wrestling with this because if this problem isn't corrected, today's temporary street kids will be tomorrow's chronically homeless. It's a repeated cycle. The last surge of homelessness was in the late 70s because of the economy, unaffordable housing exacerbated by closing of mental institutions. Then the urban homeless were called street people, and cities were desperate for solutions. The most common recommendation was drive them to the city limits. One city thought about putting rat poison in public dumpsters to stop scavenging. Tulsa was more compassionate. Social service agencies pitched in to help. Downtown churches began feeding them, and a day center for the homeless was built. Now, 40 years later, a new cycle of homelessness. About one-fourth of the homeless are veterans, but the new, more visible population is young, 18 to 24-year-old street kids. They're homeless because of breakdowns in family, failure of education, lack of job opportunities, aging out of foster care, mental illness, drugs, inadequate health care, and unaffordable housing. Once again, the immediate solution is to say, get them out of here, get them out of my sight. Cleveland took a different approach with an awareness project. They dressed mannequins in hoodies like teenagers and set them around town holding signs that said, "My mother's boyfriend hits me," or "I'm lost and nobody's looking for me." I know it's frustrating for downtown businesses, churches, and shoppers to see groups of homeless street kids. Some people are scared. Some are angry. Others of us are trying to find solutions. More mental health help. More social service help. More police security. Maybe another day center for youth. How about public toilet facilities? While we're looking for current solutions, let's also look at root causes. Some people call them hordes, as in hordes of barbarians. But doesn't that just fan the fear? If we look around, don't we all know a family with a child who's had trouble with school, the law, drugs, mental health? Who are these street kids? They are our children. We don't throw them away. We become part of the solution and not part of the problem.
Connie Cronley is an essayist, a freelance writer, and the executive director of Iron Gate Food Kitchen in downtown Tulsa, where tomorrow, like every other day, they'll be providing food and nourishment to our city's homeless and hungry population. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. On behalf of producer Scott Gregory and the entire staff at Public Radio Tulsa, we wish you a very happy and blessed Thanksgiving. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.
The University of Tulsa welcomes the Greater Tulsa community to a wide array of athletic events, artistic performances, exhibitions, academic lectures, and symposia held on campus. Our public events are open to all. Requests for accommodation of disabilities may be directed to Dr. Tawny Taylor at 918-631-2315. To ensure availability of an interpreter, 5 to 7 days' notice is needed. 48 hours is recommended for all other accommodations.